He paid the equivalent of $800 for a stinky team shirt that was three sizes too big for him. And now he's launching a brand new Formula One magazine right here in Australia. This week's episode is with Luke West. Welcome back to Away We Go podcast.
Are you ready? It's lights out and away we go!
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Away We Go podcast. My name's Diane Bortoletto and I'm your host. And today I'm in Margaret River and I'm joined by Luke West. I'm very excited to have Luke on the podcast, first guest for 2026. And Luke is the editor of a brand new magazine called Pole Position. It's the 2026 Grand Prix and Australian Grand Prix preview. He's been a lifelong motorsport fan. Started watching F1 back in the early 80s. So welcome to the show, Luke.
Thank you, Di. Lovely to be here. What an honour to be the first guest of the year.
I'm so happy you agreed to come on. Now, Pole Position, brand new magazine. Is it on the shelves yet?
On the shelves as of February 23, and will stay on the shelves for 2.5 months as a new annual magazine Grand Prix season preview. With particular focus on the Australian Grand Prix.
Fabulous. So when you say on the shelf, do you mean, like, is it a subscription-only magazine or can we walk into a newsagent and pick it up?
It'll be available from all good newsagents, as they say, in magazine and book publishing, and some bad ones too, the old joke goes. So from newsagents nationally, you can also order it from My Magazines online. A lot of people pre-ordered it. So there are some other outlets that sell it, but predominantly it is the newsagents.
So a brand new magazine about Formula One printed in Australia, which is hugely exciting for Formula One fans. How did you come to be a publisher of a brand new F1 magazine? How did that happen?
I've got a background in magazine publishing. I worked for Auto Action magazine about 20 years ago in-house. And as a contributor, and that's a magazine that is about all forms of motorsport, both domestic and international, lots of F1 coverage in that. From there, I went to work for a company called Next Media, and I was editor of Australian Muscle Car magazine for 8 or 9 years, from 2011 to 2020. Australian Muscle Car magazine is about Australian motoring history, so the history of the Bathurst 1000 and the cars that raced in it. They did for a while have the right to publish F1 Racing magazine.
Remember that? Yes.
Yeah. And when I moved on from Next Media and Australian Muscle Car magazine, I went into book publishing for a while, and then I still work. I'm a freelancer essentially, so I still do some work for a book publisher for sport and recreation books. But I was also commissioned by Next Media to produce the annual magazine that previews the Bathurst 12-hour, the sports car race or GT race at Mount Panorama, held every year in early February. And that means that Next Media has a preview magazine now with the publishing of Pole Position for each of the three biggest motor races in Australia. So the Bathurst 12-hour, the Bathurst 1000, and the third of the magazines to the party is the Formula One mag, Pole Position. So it was a case of completing the trio. So I think with, in magazine and book publishing, you're always looking for opportunities. And with Formula One being turbocharged by Drive to Survive and just its popularity growth generally, was thought that now was the time to launch a new magazine. I think the days of new periodicals, whether it's bi-monthly or monthly magazines, is probably over. But the one area of printed magazines that still goes really well is annuals or one-shots. So the plan is every February to publish a season preview called Pole Position ahead of the new Grand Prix season.
There's been a resurgence in people wanting that tactile, being able to hold a magazine, get off their screens, get off their phones. Can't wait to see it. There's apparently a really very interesting article about women that like Formula One in Pole Position.
That's right. There's some actual celebrities, I'll call them like that. There's There's one by the name of Diane who features prominently in a Q&A as to, and the idea there, Di, is just, I guess, the magazine's going to be sold to the new breed of Formula One fanatics that have come on board the last, you know, 5 years or whatever it is. But there's a lot of long-time motorsport fans like your good self, like my good self, who always looking to read quality articles and quality publications. So we tried to do a mix of appealing to the old and new fans. And one of the articles is, yeah, just to get to the bottom of what is it about Formula One that's attracted younger women, which is a demographic that Formula One traditionally never had until the last 3 or 4 years. We have four F1 enthusiasts, women enthusiasts from, I think, four different parts of Australia, four different demographics in terms of age. So we asked the same question. How did you get into it? Why do you love it? How do you indulge? And there's many and varied answers. So yeah, it's really, really interesting just to get that insight. It's more so than a lot of other modern sports with a female audience.
I think it's a lot to do with, well, Drive to Survive, but also I think the rise in social media and the content that all the teams and all the drivers are making and other Formula One creators are making, you know, great content. It's so good to see Formula One having a moment again on center stage and being very popular, as it should be, as in my mind, it always deserved to be. So yeah, it's great to see.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of enjoyment, doesn't it, as a long-time F1 fan, to see new people falling in love with your sport as such. And it's always interesting to hear their insights as to why they love it. So we're trying to tap into that with the new magazine. There's a range of different stories, some technical, some less though. So there's a bit of Insta-style content in pole position, but there's some really good analysis too behind the scenes. So something for everyone.
And I saw that you featured Danny Clarkson. She's a great creator. Like, I follow her on Instagram and she's always giving really useful nuggets of information as to where to buy tickets and looking at all different things surrounding Grand Prix. That's fab.
The thing about Danny is that she doesn't miss a trick. So she's Melbourne-based, and if there is a development at Albert Park, something new, she'll post it. If there is a retailer or a sponsor who's brought out a new product, and she was the person that sent me down to my supermarket, Di, to get a Kit Kat, F1-shaped Kit Kat, because she was onto it. So I asked Danny to write a story, how to get the most out of your weekend at the Australian Grand Prix, you know, whether that's how to meet the drivers, whether that is the best places to view the cars, best things to do outside of Albert Park, you know, in the lead-up days. So she's put together a really good feature, and I'm sure that everyone, even if you've been to the Australian Grand Prix for the last 4 or 5 years, there'll be something in that article that you didn't realise that you can go and check out this year.
I did read that article, and I've literally just published a very comprehensive travel guide to Melbourne for anybody travelling to Melbourne for the Grand Prix and things to see and do off track. And some of the things that Danny had, I was like, oh, yes, you know, we on the same wavelength, had the same thing. Now, your love of Formula One, Luke, where did that come? I mean, you're a lifelong fan, so I'm presuming you've got a family that loves motorsport. Like, how did it happen?
Boom. No, I'm the black sheep of the family, Di, so.
Oh, so am I.
So no one in my family was really interested in motorsport. I'm the youngest of four kids, grew up in Sydney, and my eldest brother would watch the Bathurst 1000 and maybe the touring car race or two. So he's to blame. He took me out to Amaru Park in northwest Sydney when I was about 10 years of age and fell in love with the sport. And around about that time, Alan Jones had a run at the championship and won the championship in 1980. So I got swept up in the AJ hysteria. Now, at that stage, you couldn't watch Formula One live on television. It wasn't until the year after that Channel 9, Wide World of Sports, started broadcasting F1 live into Australian lounge rooms. So I jumped on that. I was a little bit young that first year. My parents still got me off to bed before those late night Grand Prix started. But within a year or two, I was watching every F1 race live as someone in my early teens. And I think I watched every race in 1982, that really dramatic year where there were so many different winners, so much tragedy with Gilles Villeneuve dying. I was just swept up in that with him being killed at the Belgian Grand Prix. And it hooked me by then. It was just the triumph and the tragedy. And there was no turning back from there.
Oh, wow. My dad still thinks they're just cars going around in circles, and I've tried really hard and I've just given up now. But it's taken me 18 years, but I've converted my niece. She's now into it. So I'm stoked. Yeah.
Okay. You got your family member. So that's good. That's job done. Well done.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the early Grand Prix that you went to.
My first F1 race, my first Grand Prix was the ill-fated 1991 race in Adelaide. And how about this for timing? I go and buy the tickets. I was at university, had my first weekend away at an F1 race, and it bloody rained, didn't it, die on race day. And we only got 14 laps in before the race was declared as being too dangerous. So I'm sitting in the grandstand with my mate. I've paid all this money to be there, and I'm feeling totally ripped off that I didn't get to see the full 78 laps. I only got, you know, about 25 minutes or 14 laps. Of course, today I feel as though, you know, I saw a bit of history because I actually saw my racing hero win that day, even though it was an abbreviated race. So Ayrton Senna won in the wet. He was in the V12 McLaren Honda. So it was the only year that a V12 engine car won. So I feel now, really, when I look back on that, I go, you idiot, you know, you saw something really special. You saw one of the greats of Formula One win the world championship that day. He'd actually secured it prior to that, but he was a champion elect. He had to go through the motions, and he was crowned champion officially that day. So that was really special. I was just blown away by the noise, as everyone is, and the color and the spectacle. And so there's just so much to see and do at the actual Adelaide race. Hey, I got to tell you, one of the cool things in those days, I was also a Gerhard Berger fan. Well, I still am. I was a member. I probably didn't love Senna as much as I loved Gerhard Berger back in 1991. And I was a member of Club Gerhard Berger, a fan club. And we had a meetup in the Adelaide Parklands on the Friday with other members. And it was all, I think the club president, and there was probably about 20 people in this club, had tried to get Gerhard along for us all to meet him, but wasn't to be, but at least we met the other members. So don't be too impressed, but I was a card-carrying member of Club Gerhard Berger.
Didn't Daniel Ricciardo go out with his daughter?
I think they may still be an item. So, that's exactly right. I can't. Heidi, I think, is Gerhard and his wife's daughter's name. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll have to Google that. So, Gerhard Berger, the clown prince of Grand Prix racing, who was credited with lightening up Ayrton Senna.
There you go. Wow. God, who knew that there was such a thing as a card-carrying member? I want to drive a fan club.
That's right. I went to two Adelaide Grand Prix. The other time I went was the last Grand Prix, and that was 1995. So I was part of what is supposedly the largest one-day sporting crowd in Australia. 205,000 people rocked up on main race day in 1995. So a lot of people who were planning to go and see F1, well, that was the year they said, well, I've got to go this year or I'm going to miss out on seeing any in Adelaide. So that was pretty special. And I was determined, one of the things that was a feature, you probably remember this, Di, of the Adelaide Grand Prix, was that because it was the end to the final race of the season, a lot of the teams, the crew members, sold their pit crew uniforms to members of the public after the race. So there we were. The race was run and won. Damon Hill won that year. And then all the crowd spills onto the main straight. And the shop front, the counter, was the pit wall. And I was determined it was the last opportunity, last chance to buy a piece of memorabilia from a team, a crew member. And I seemed to be fixated on the Ligier team, the French team that's now defunct. And there was one of the crew members who was doing a bit of an auction. He'd bring out one blue Jotard cigarette branded team apparel at a time, like a shirt on behalf of all of his team members. And he tried to make out it was the last one. Oh, it's the last one we have. And of course, suckers like me would go, oh, no, I want it. So I handed over. I paid $150 for a team, a Ligier team shirt that weekend that a mechanic, a French mechanic, had worn. It's dunk. I don't know what that bloke had eaten, that French bloke had eaten over the course of the weekend, but it smelled so bad. It took about 5 washes to get the smell out, but here it was, and I have it today hanging in my wardrobe. I don't think I've ever worn it other than to put it on for about 10 seconds to see if it now fits me, because it's about 3 sizes too big. But it's something very special to me because it brings back all the memories of my trips to Adelaide.
Yeah, that's why I've got so many clothes in my wardrobe too, because they all bring back so many memories, because a lot of them I buy during my travels and I almost collect clothes like souvenirs. But $150 back then would have been a massive amount of money.
Absolutely. So that was prior to getting married. And so I don't think I told my wife or my girlfriend at that stage how much I spent. You know, we were saving for a home. Definitely didn't tell my mum and dad, who were pretty tight. It was one of those things, I want to do it. It's the last opportunity. And of course, it's not something you can do today because Melbourne is the first race.
That's right. They all need their uniforms for the rest of the season, don't they?
As much as they might want to on-sell them. So what's your most prized piece of F1 merchandise?
Wow. Well, besides my Ferrari hat that I absolutely love, probably the pass to the Red Bull Energy Station from last year, because just being in there felt like a dream. That was...
Yeah, it's another world, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was like such a fantastic experience to be in there. You're fed, you're watered. The position is right at the end of the pit straight. So like premium viewing. And half the people in there had no clue about Formula One. I spent the whole of Friday and Saturday qualifying. I wasn't there on the Sunday and it was bucketing with rain. So, you know, I was quite happy to be tucked up on the couch watching the race where I could fully concentrate. But I spent those 2 days just explaining Formula One to everyone around me, what they were doing, what free practice was.
You should be on the payroll, Di. Public relations.
These people have been invited often. You know, the ones that were in there who had paid for their own tickets, they knew what was going on, of course, but loads of others had just been invited and they had like no idea. And I'm thinking, God, like half those fans, not even half those fans, but probably 85% of the fans out there in GA would give their right arm to be in here right now. Like free-flowing Moet champagne, they were passing around oysters. You didn't have to leave. They had like a tiered outside section so you could stand and get a view over people. And you didn't have to move because waitresses would come round with food, with drinks, and it was awesome. And they had the Team RB V-Car drivers come in and do a appearance. They had like an artist doing this live art installation, DJs all day just pumping out loud music. Like it was the energy station. So, and Red Bull just served like all day, mixed in cocktails and stuff. And I remember like mid-afternoon on qualifying day, I sat out the front. They had a beer garden area at the front. It was a lot quieter and it just like just needed a reprieve from all of it. I was just sitting there just going, oh my God, there's Mick Doohan. There's Crofty, because they were all
fantastic,
walking to and from the media centre, which was right next door to the media centre, the Red Bull hospitality unit. So yeah, it was awesome. So that pass, I missed out on getting a ticket to the Australian Grand Prix, and then I got the call up. Hey, do you want to come in? I'm like, oh my God, great. Yes. Yeah.
Do you still have that pass? Can you see if it works this year?
Oh, they've changed the name of it now. So last year was the Red Bull Energy Station. This year, I think it's called the Red Bull Suite or something different. Now, you've written more than magazines as well. You've written books.
Yes. So in my recent past, I worked for a book publisher and co-wrote and coordinated the Formula One Down Under, History of the Australian Grand Prix. So that book should still be out there in retail land. You'd be able to find it in some good bookshops. Also was the author of The Immortals of Australian Motor Racing. That was a little bit more focused. It was focused on domestic stars, you know, the Dick Johnsons, Peter Brocks and Alan Moffats of the world. So yes, though, quite a few other irons in the fire with some fun books I can't tell you about. I'm just being a bit secretive coming up. Some other F1 projects in the works, but I probably won't see them for a couple of years. So yeah, I double in book publishing in addition to the magazine publishing. So no, it's all good fun.
Oh, that's exciting. When you can talk about those projects, you'll have to keep us posted so we can get you back on to talk about them or give you a shout out. Oh, that's exciting.
Well, sure.
All right, Luke, let's dive into the final three. So these are three questions that we ask all the guests that come onto the podcast. This year, I've tweaked the questions a little bit. But first up, Luke, if you could go to any Formula One race on the calendar or on a previous calendar, which race would you choose to go to and why?
That's a pretty easy one for me to answer, Di, because I'm a big overall motorsport fan. F1 is a large part of that, but I love my Indy 500, my IndyCar racing, and I love sports cars in general. And I've been lucky enough to have gone to the Indy 500 with 350,000 of my closest friends. This is in the year 2000. Saw Juan Montoya win that 2000 race. I've also been in more recent years to Le Mans. So I saw the Ferrari win in 24. So I went to the 24 in 24. So I have a personal, like Fernando Alonso would like to win the blue ribbon, the triple crown, by winning Indy 500, Le Mans and Monaco. I would like to have the spectating version of that to go to all three events. So it's only Monaco left. And of course, I want to get in and see all the yachts and the harbour and the glitz and glamour. I have been to Monaco, but not at race time. So that's definitely number one. If you let me have a podium there, I would also like to go to Monza because, you know, being the home of Ferrari and the, you know, I'd like to walk around the banking that they used to have, you know, 80 years ago or whatever, however long they had that, and just soak up the Ferrari fandom, the Tifosi. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yep, you got that spot on. Yeah.
Just to really get into that and walk through the forest, walk through the park and all that sort of thing. I've been to Spa for the 24-hour race, but I'd like to go back to Spa, of course, and see F1 cars go through Eau Rouge and that section of track. That would be pretty spectacular too. So that's probably my top three.
Yeah, my top three would be, well, Monza. Monza's at the top. I've been to Monaco and that was a fabulous experience at pre-Drive to Survive.
For Monaco, is it possible in any way to do it cheaply? Is there general admission areas?
I don't actually remember if, and I haven't looked into it. I don't know, to be honest. There must be. I mean, you see people hanging off the balconies. I don't think that's a very cheap way to do it. I think you either need to know someone or pay a premium. But Luke, someone in your position should be invited on a super yacht, you know, to be able to write about the experience so you can tell all your readers exactly what it's like, or you could send another writer to go and do that for you.
Oh, I like the way you think, Di, but I think you've just done yourself out of a job and a glamour trip because you were angling to get the writing job or do a travel story on Monaco. But I think as editor, I have to put my hand up first and take dibs on that one, claim dibs on that one.
You've done the hard yards. You deserve it. Absolutely. All right. Question number two. In a non-race week, so no Formula One on, which destination on the calendar, on the Formula One calendar, would you choose to go to for a holiday and why?
I'm going to stay Florida. So obviously it's linked to the Miami Grand Prix. I'd love to suss out Miami. Sounds like a hip and happening place. But in particular, Florida interests me from the point of view of doing some space history or space tourism.
Yeah, right.
Cape Canaveral and such. And it would also be a launching pad for Caribbean holidays. So that's my thinking. They're also down that part of the world, you have, you know, being an overall motorsport fan, I could probably have a side trip to Daytona for the Oval. I would love to get there for the 24-hour race they have. And the other big sports car race they have in Florida is at Sebring for the 12-hour there. So they have that every year in March. So, yeah, there's a few boxes I'd like to tick off my to-do list by going to Florida.
Yeah, right. And if you could holiday with any Formula One driver, dead or alive? I think I know the answer to this one based on an earlier question. Who would you choose to holiday with and why?
I know you're getting to Ayrton Senna, so I'm going to choose one driver that has passed on, and it is indeed Senna. If I was going to do it with a driver no longer with us, it would be Ayrton, very charismatic chap. You could have some very deep and meaningful chats, I reckon, by a pool over a cocktail or sitting next to him on a plane. He's always so insightful, such a deep thinker. He'd be the top of the list. Now, I think the other one is one that's still with us, thank God, and a motor racing treasure, Mario Andretti. I'd say, hey, Mario, let's go to the Italian Grand Prix.
It'd be fun.
Show me around.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I'm sure he's getting super excited now with Cadillac just about to start testing in Bahrain, and it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's good to have some Andretti involvement there. You know, I'm not sure if it's a token gesture to get Mario on the board of the Cadillac F1 team, but it's a really nice show of respect to one of the greats. I had a very small brush with fame when it comes to Mario Andretti. He's so cool. Like, he's in his early 80s, but
yeah, I was gonna say,
really
yeah.
hip and happening with it, fit, and he's such a people person. This is all another reason why he'd be good fun to hang out with and just have a chat to. Every year when he puts up his Christmas tree, he takes a photo with his family members, including his dog, Gabriel, and puts it on Insta. Now, there's not too many 80-plus-year-olds who are on Insta and connect with the world and their relatives and friends and fans, but Mario Andretti very much is on Instagram. So have a look each year for Mario's massive Christmas tree that he has in his beautiful house in Pennsylvania. And then he invites people, once he posts his Christmas tree and his Christmas decorations, and says, here's mine. I wanted to show it to everyone. Now show me your Christmas decorations. And I did that one year. We've got a little garden display at our house where, you know, I put baubles on the hedges and little cutesy Christmas signs and stuff like that. And I posted that and I sent it to Mario. There he is, the great man. He's pooch.
See me that.
That's it. Yeah. And he replies, oh, that looks like a fantastic garden display, Luke. Next time I'm in Sydney at Christmas time, if I ever am, I'm going to come over and have a look at it. Is that cool? And I went, oh, yeah. So that was a really nice brush with fame. And I think apart from just getting a buzz out of that a small brush, and it just shows what a cool dude Mario Andretti is. I mean, he raced, you know, the 1978 world champion. So he raced through the most dangerous era, won the world championship. I don't think he would have made too many enemies in his time, and then had this extra career in IndyCar racing too. So he is one cool dude.
One of motorsports greats. Yeah, I couldn't understand why his bid for a Formula One team got rejected, and then he's now involved in Cadillac and that got accepted. Of course, I don't know all the details, but he tried for years and years and years and years, didn't he, to get an F1 team?
Yeah,
so he was in the championship. But, yeah.
So he was supporting his son, Michael. So his son, Michael, had a IndyCar team and a sports car team in America. And when Michael and his backers wanted to get into F1, Michael was the front man. It didn't go so well. He was rejected. And I'm oversimplifying things here. Michael, son of Mario. And pretty much, as you alluded to there, as you said, the Andretti bid was dismissed. But then his backers have found a way with Cadillac, so with GM. So as a nod to the Andretti input into Cadillac, Mario is on the board there as an expert advisor. There is a small amount of Mario, small amount of Andretti back in F1.
Besides Ferrari, because Ferrari, I think the Cadillac livery has been my favourite of the liveries. Not that I've paid a whole lot of attention to it, to be honest. Often I see a car livery being launched and I think, oh yeah, looks pretty much the same as last year. A couple of different sponsor things have moved. I don't even know why they make such a big deal about launching the car liveries, to be quite honest. I mean, if they were launching the cars, if we're seeing that, like, all the new things at the cars and seeing the cars on track and how they perform, that's a different story. But anyhow, digress. But the Cadillac livery, I just love how it's darker on one side and lighter on the other side. It's very cool.
Asymmetric design there, white and black. At first I thought it was like silver and black, and I wasn't sure I liked it because, you know, there's so much silver and black already with Mercedes and Audi. Audi's a great story too. I'll come back to that in a moment. But I'm hoping when the Cadillac is on track, you can see that it's white, not silver. It is a really cool design. And I really, as I said, I really like the Audi design too, with a bit of orange in it. That's an amazing story. I think it's been overlooked with the new regulations and everyone wondering, you know, which drivers and which teams will go so well. Any other year, a manufacturer like Audi coming in to build their own chassis and to build their own engine would have been the dominating story. Yeah. They've been a little bit overlooked. They're giving their greatest market rivals, fellow German or European prestige luxury mark, Mercedes, 30-year head start because of Mercedes joined. This current iteration dates back to the Australian Grand Prix in 1996. So it's 30 years of Mercedes in Formula One, and suddenly their big rival, they've got two big rivals, of course, in the European prestige market. It's Audi and BMW. Gee, it's a ballsy move on behalf of Audi to jump in and take on Mercedes in Formula One. It's going to take a little while for them to get up to speed.
Exactly like you said, so exciting to see another, you know, big prestige car manufacturer entering F1.
We get a few this year, don't we? So we get Cadillac, we get Audi, we get Ford as the engine partner and contributor to the in-house Red Bull engine program or power unit program. You get Toyota have upped their involvement and their investment as the title sponsor for Haas. So four big car manufacturers, and we go into detail in pole position about this too. We call it F1's motherlode season. So it's the year Formula One has got the investment from the big car manufacturers. If you tally up all the cars sold around the world, the manufacturers responsible for selling half all the cars sold each year around the world are now in Formula One, almost half.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great stat. That's awesome.
It is, because you think about it, you've got General Motors. So you've got three biggies coming in this year. You've got General Motors with Cadillac. You have Toyota, who is the biggest car maker by profit. And you've got Ford coming in. So the two big American giants. And then Toyota also, and then the Audi group or the Volkswagen group, because that's the parent company for Audi.
Yeah, and Mercedes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Well, gosh, you're just a motorsport fountain of knowledge, Luke. It's been an absolute pleasure having a chat to you on the podcast. Now, just remind us, your magazine, Pole Position, when's it coming out?
Right. So it's on sale in newsagents nationally from February 23. We'll be on sale for a couple of months because the idea is after the Australian Grand Prix that the magazine is still very much current. It's a season preview guide, the calendar in there. So you can check the telecast times or the race start times, I should say, for each of the 24 races this year. We go team by team, car by car, driver by driver. Lots of good fun stuff. And there's a history section at the back of the magazine too, because it's 40 years. Formula One came to Australia 40 years ago with the Adelaide Grand Prix. It's just ticked over 40 years now. So we have a history 101 section at the back of the magazine.
Fabulous. So that'd be so good for more recent Formula One fans if you, you know, want to get to learn a bit about F1 history in Australia. Go out and grab Pole Position next week. It'll be on the shelves for a couple of months.
And one thing, of course, I can't forget for all the Oscar Piastri fans, there's two Oscar Piastri features. There's one, we chat to Oscar about his thoughts on the 2025 season and his thoughts on the season ahead. And then we got a really cool rewind 10 years. Chris Lambden, longtime motorsport journalist, chats to Oscar and his old team manager from his karting days, because there's a nice story that, yeah, we see Oscar, the ultra successful Melbournian today in Formula One, but 10 years ago he and his family took a big risk. He went over, he moved over to England as a 14-year-old. Can you believe that?
By himself.
And what a gamble. It is nuts. Absolutely nuts. So we revisit Oscar the kart racer. So that's a nice little add-on feature too.
Yeah, I had a chat with Nicole Piastri at the opening of the F1 exhibition in Melbourne last November. That's out in episode 58. So you can check that out. But I did ask Nicole about how they keep in such close contact with each other because Oscar hasn't lived at home for more than 10 years. And she said, well, every Sunday, not so much these days because he's racing, but every Sunday he would FaceTime home. And I asked him about how he was feeling with the last couple of races of the season because, you know, such a nail-biting end to last season. And she said, you know what, we don't really talk about racing when he's on the phone. We just talk about normal stuff. He wants to see the dog. He wants to know how everybody's going. You can check out episode 58 and go out and grab a copy of Pole Position when it hits the shelves next week. Thanks, Luke. If you guys have liked what you've listened to, what you've heard, please rate and review this show. It really helps us get more eyeballs and ears listening to the show. So please rate and review. And you can follow us on the social media platforms. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook. And if you're watching on YouTube, hi, thanks very much for tuning in. Thank you very much, Luke West. And until next week and until lights out.
Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.